You're listening to TalkTainmentRadio.com.
The views and opinions expressed are those of the host and guest and not necessarily those of TalkTainmentRadio.com, the management, the staff, or K&E World Network, LLC.
Can you come and save her? Let her believe it, get on her knees and pray her, then pray her, and never look back. Once the world forgave you, then do right, then do good. And it's so hard to do right when you do wrong, when I turn right, but you turn all the way.
Henshaw, and welcome. We're glad you're here for a conversation with Dawn Karima. Energetic, exciting, entertaining, and informative.
Welcome to our show, and I'm so glad you've joined us today. Thank you for being with us today. My name is Dr. Dawn Karima, and I am very pleased to welcome our distinguished guest to our visit today. Will you please introduce yourself to our friends who are listening?
Hi, my name is Yolanda Williams, and I'm the founder of Parenting Decolonized. It is a podcast, but also just a parenting movement around helping parents teach our I'm a parent educator. I help parents learn how to be conscious, intentional parents and raise liberated kids.
Wow. Well, a very warm welcome to you today. Thank you for being with us. Thank you. I am so interested, you know, as an Indigenous mother, I am always interested whenever I hear decolonize in any form. So I really am so happy that you're here today, and I want to talk about these things, but let's start with this. When you say decolonized, what do you mean?
So I know, and I want to just be respectful of the fact that because we are, you know, on these, on Turtle Island, on stolen land, that the first thing that decolonized means will always mean is land back, right? There's also a psychological and physical things that we have to decolonize from. And I know that there's a big push to not center the colonizers and colonization by saying re-indigenize. So decolonize, but when I speak about decolonizing our parenting, it really is just thinking about what are the things that we have been indoctrinated to believe about ourselves, our children, our culture, and how do we as parents continue to that cycle, continue to indoctrinate people, our children, and how has that affected our community at large and our world? And so when we speak about decolonizing, it really just is understanding that there is a large psychological aspect to being able to colonize the people. And that includes loss of culture, loss of language, loss of identity, personal, cultural, violence. And then they start to, with colonization, they had to then instill other beliefs, new beliefs, which is specifically for, I'm sure, with, well, you can tell me, with when it comes to Black parents specifically, that, you know, violence is needed to raise a quote-unquote good child.
Right. Oh, my goodness. I am just so fascinated listening to this because I'm amazed by that. How did that happen? And it's happening across, you know, cultures. I mean, you know, there are lots of cultures that believe that children, you know, he's being so bad, he needs a beating. Oh, my goodness. What?
Yeah.
How did this happen?
Well, honestly, it is a byproduct of a bunch of different things. So I have like a little flow chart that I created for a webinar that I did, and I showed at the top of it is colonization. And it flows into white supremacy, capitalism, and then patriarchy. And those, all of those three things work together Uh-huh. Underneath that is organized religion.
Okay.
And underneath that is parenting. And so parenting, and underneath that is education. So all of it are indoctrination tools to uphold colonial mindsets, which is really just about concentrating power and money to a small group of people. We know race isn't real.
But the
effects of racism are real. And we know that capitalism is also a made-up concept, the way that we practice it in the United States specifically. It's a made-up concept, and it's harmful to everybody. Yet, in a lot of things that we do, we uphold it. And a lot of this is upheld through religion indoctrination, which does stuff like, you know, hitting your children. And people misinterpret the Bible to attribute things that aren't in it to harming children. But also patriarchy holds that up. It says that violence is necessary for men to be men, to rule their household. And in turn, it creates a violent atmosphere at home in general. You know, we know that a lot of households are raised by women, a lot of households are headed by women now.
Yeah.
But that's still patriarchal violence, because that's where that whole idea came from. We know that people who, from indigenous communities, a lot of this violence was not present before colonization.
Right. The boarding schools and residential schools is where it comes. Yeah, exactly. It's trained. It's actually...
It is a learned behavior. So that means that we can unlearn it, because even across... There is no record of violent styles of parenting in Africa before colonization.
My goodness.
There's none. And if you look at quote-unquote attachment therapy, attachment parenting, a lot of the books, they went over to indigenous countries in Africa, in Asia, and looked at how did these indigenous people of those countries parent. And there was no violence.
Right.
It was very much this what we're looking at, like gentle parenting, conscious parenting. And it was a village mentality on top of it, which I'm sure is still really present in the indigenous community. The native communities, like, it is a village mentality. So that's where white supremacy, capitalism, patriarchy, it all overlaps to create toxic individualism, which means that we are now parenting solo and silos. Even if a two-parent household is not enough people to parent a child really well.
Right, right. 24 hours in a day, yeah.
Yeah. I mean, your child needs to learn from different people. Mm-hmm. And that's what the village is for. And that was stolen. And so... really understanding that these things were put into place to pit us against each other so we can continue to feel hopeless, to feel helpless, to feel upset and rageful and angry towards one another. And we're not looking at the puppet masters up top who are trying to control all of us through the means of indoctrination. And really a lot of it starts with how we parent our kids. When we normalize violence, when we normalize systemic inequity, you know, you tell your child, don't hit me, then you hit them.
Oh, no.
That's normalizing that the person with power can cause the harm.
Right.
And then they take that lesson out into the world and they become bullies, police officers, you know, they become presidents, they become teachers. They
predators.
Become predators. And people don't realize what we normalize in our homes and what we make seem natural is really just indoctrination from colonization.
I am actually wiping tears from my eyes right now, because I am so relieved to hear you say these things out loud, because there is so much folklore, let's call it that, folklore that says, you know, oh boy, you know, spare the rod, spoil the child, or if you don't beat them, the police will, you know, just insane things. And I never really paid a lot of attention to it until we have a preschooler. So when I had a baby, he was with me 24/7. He's little. He's always with me. I love him dearly. Okay. And there were people who were like, you're not going to spank him? Mm-hmm. No, I really wasn't planning on it. Well, just be prepared. He's going to be bad. He's going to be spoiled. Mm-hmm. I thought, what? And I couldn't believe that in this day and age, there were people who still kind of held this as their, like, you know, yeah. belief system that they would want to pass on to other people or suggest to other people. So let's go to that, though.
Yeah.
Why are we still hitting children now in this day and age? Like, why are we doing that?
You know, it is the only type of violence that's acceptable.
Yeah.
Is the one towards children. And that includes disabled children. Oh. You know, there are 19 states in these United States that where it's still legal to hit them in schools.
Oh no.
19 states. I live in one of those states in Arkansas.
Oh my.
And what they do is they tell you, like, hey, sign this form in the parent handbook, and you have to opt out. So you're automatically opted into somebody harming your child.
Wow.
And you have to actually opt out of it.
Oh my.
So I'm actually on a board that's helping to, you know, get rid of school paddling in schools. And they use a paddle. They use a wooden paddle with holes in it.
Oh my.
To hit children.
Oh, no.
In school.
Oh, dear.
And so it is the only acceptable form of physical violence and assault. We don't see it as assault. People don't see it as violence. They see it as discipline. Mm. And we know that it is not discipline, because discipline means to guide and to teach.
Yeah.
And all that violence teaches people is fear. It does not. A lot of us were hit, and now we're out here in this world, and we, you know, we, like me, have podcasts and successful businesses and shows, you know, radio shows, and we're on TV, and we're in corporate, and we feel like, you know what, maybe that slap upside the head, maybe it did do me right.
No.
Meantime, you have all these issues with your mental and emotional health and your spiritual health.
Right.
You're feeling like lost in the world, a lot of people. There's this underlying seething anger that you just walk around with. But no, you don't attribute that to your childhood at all. You think that's just the world. It is your childhood and the world. It's both.
Mm-hmm.
Because the world told your parent or parents that they had to hit you in order for you to be a good person. And that message in and of itself is so harmful, that you are inherently bad and I must make you good, is a religious doctrine.
Yeah.
That's why I say it upholds organized religion, you know, westernized religions. They uphold a lot of the colonization, a lot of the indoctrination, because to be telling people that they are inherently bad and they must be made good.
Uh-huh.
Like that's, oh my gosh, I'm so sorry. That is a psychological, you know, that's like psychological torment.
It is.
To tell someone that.
Yeah.
And so we still believe these things because we want to have some semblance of power and control in our lives. And for a lot of people, their children are the only places that they have that. But they feel they have it. There's this person that depends on you and needs you and wants to unconditionally loves you. And you have all the power over this person. We have tremendous power over our children, and a lot of us wield that power violently.
Oh,
and
no.
It is state sanctioned, though. The violence is state. It's not illegal. It is not illegal in any state to hit your child. There are countries that have made hitting your children illegal, and they are not running around rampant filled with violence.
Yeah.
And I have to ask people. I just walked upstairs. I gotta catch my breath. Put that dog up. I have to ask people, is it working?
Yeah.
Like, are we, when you look outside.
How are we doing? Yeah.
How are we doing? Mm-hmm. What's the news look like?
Yeah.
Are we doing good? Is our mental health good? Are we less violent?
Mm-hmm.
Are the jails empty? Like, is it working?
How are divorce rates? How are the divorce rates?
Divorce
spousal
rates.
Abuse
mental
and things
health.
Like that. People can't even trust people enough to go on a date and act right. You know,
I mean, no.
Just, you know, goodness. And
mass
all of this
shooting,
is coming
full
to
shooting.
Right. Yeah.
Like,
and so,
is it working?
It's not working. No.
We are more violent and more angry and more mentally ill than we have ever been, including our children.
Uh-huh.
And I think the children are coming out, are coming to a consciousness that we didn't have when we were their age.
Uh-huh.
So they're liberating, they're rebelling in a different way than we did in earlier. They're just like, you can't, no, I'm a human.
Yeah.
So that, you know, we have been from the beginning of, you know, coming here, colonizing, enslaving, uh-huh. seeing people as subhuman.
Yes,
That's the U.S. way.
Mm-hmm.
Because everyone has to, the people who were not enslaved or like the indigenous people, everyone else, they had to be okay with what was happening around them for it to have lasted for centuries. Of seeing actual people being owned by other people, right? Their children being snatched from them, their children just dying. There was laws that was created to protect. I forgot what it was called, but there was a law that had to be created because so many enslaved children were being killed by their enslaver's wife.
Oh my.
She was, white women were just out here poking out eye, like torturing these babies because they were like the babies of rape, basically.
Mm-hmm.
And so there would have to be a law on the books that said, hey, no, this is legal as long as they're enslaved. So just, and these are babies, you know, babies being fed to alligators. Babies.
Yeah, right.
So just understanding that this is the history of this country. That's not going away because it's never been reckoned with. We have never reckoned with the fact that that's the history of this country that treated babies like alligator bait.
Mm-hmm.
So we cannot be surprised that not that long ago, that wasn't that long ago, okay?
Right. And I think that's important.
We haven't done anything to heal from it.
Right. And we treat it like it's ancient history. Way back then.
Yeah.
Except that, you know, yikes. It's not, you know, and that's a very important point to make. It's still in our consciousness, and it still certainly would have colored the parenting and mm-hmm. the guidance or whatever that great-grandparents, grandparents, grandparents, parents have and influences us. And, you know, one of the things I think is important for us to ask you, because I keep hearing this a lot as a parent, people talk about punishment
mm-hmm.
with children. You know, he should be his own punishment, or he should be punished or whatever. What's the difference between discipline and punishment? Because I feel like somebody missed that along the way.
They redefined it, what they did.
Okay.
So
okay.
Discipline, again, is guidance, right? So, again, we want to take something back to that whole spare the rod thing, which was a poem. It's not even in the Bible.
Mm-hmm.
But the rod is used to guide, right? A shepherd, you got to think about biblical times. It was a shepherd that was walking around with like thousands of sheep, having to guide them over long periods of time. A sheep is a skittish prey animal. You cannot just be hitting a sheep upside the head with a rod because they will run away.
Yeah.
And then the whole herd will run away. So they would use the rod to gently guide. They would, you know, move the rod around. If they touched the sheep with it, it wasn't a hit. It was a gentle, like, touch, like, okay, move over here. It was a guide. It was gentle, and it had to be gentle because the sheep would run away otherwise. And that's what discipline is. It is literally just, let me teach you where to go. Let me show you where to go. Let me guide you where to go for future behavior. Whereas punishment is revenge. Punishment is revenge for past behavior. It is not ever correct in a way that helps a child learn how to do anything in the future differently, right? So let's give an example. For instance, your 13-year-old, you said, you know, this is, you can't have your phone past a certain time, but you keep noticing that they're on their phone past a certain time. Now, a lot of parents just be like, just take the phone. That's the easy thing to do. That's the easy thing to do, but does it teach them how to do anything? Or are you just saying, like, you didn't listen to me, so you don't get your phone anymore? That sounds like revenge. And it's not helpful because it doesn't actually teach them a skill. What we have to understand is kids, their brains are still developing. The last part of the brain to develop, the prefrontal cortex, is in charge of decision-making, time management, right? Risk assessment,
mm-hmm.
Emotional control and regulation. That's the very last thing to develop in the human brain. So when we're asking our kids to do certain things, it's not that they sometimes aren't listening, because sometimes they just aren't, okay? They're humans that way.
That's right.
There are times they actually can't. They need our help. They need our support. So what all we have to do is be like, okay, you know what? I noticed that you don't have the capability to get off this phone by 9 o'clock. And you know what? That's hard for me, too. And that's why I went ahead and put an app blocker on my phone. I'm going to put one of yours, too.
Oh,
so
wow.
After 9 o'clock, because I'm an adult, I have an app blocker on my phone, okay?
Mm-hmm.
Because I cannot control my urge to be on social media at night. So I have to put tools, right?
Mm-hmm.
I can't override my brain. My brain wants to be scrolling through, you know, the internet, laughing and kicking at night. But I'm not getting any sleep. So now I have to figure out what are the tools and strategies I can use to my advantage. And that's all you got to do with kids. And, of course, it gets complicated when there's things like sex involved or alcohol or drugs or really risky behavior. And that's when we really need to understand guidance and discipline is not punishment. Because what we want in the end is for our children to feel safe and connected to us. Safe to be able to say, I made this mistake, the big mistake.
Yeah.
And they know that they can actually talk to you about it and get some solutions and help from you.
Mm-hmm.
Or what they'll learn how to do is lie. Really good.
Uh-huh.
All you do when you punish is you teach children how to avoid punishment.
Right.
You not teach them the skill to not get punished in the first place. You're not teaching a skill. You're not showing them how to do something, how to communicate when they need help. What you're teaching them is, I don't want to get my butt whipped. I don't want to get yelled at. So I'm just not going to say nothing. Or I'm going to lie, because maybe I can get away with this lie and avoid punishment. A lot of kids lie just to see if they can get away with it, because the truth also gets you punished.
Yeah.
It gets you yelled at. So they're just learning. What are the ways that I can avoid this?
Right.
They're not actually learning in ways that will help them.
Mm-hmm.
They're not learning any life lessons or reflections.
Mm-mm.
So that's the difference. It's like, what is your goal? Is what I always ask parents. What is your goal?
Right.
What do you want? When you think about your child does something and you're like, they need consequences. Okay, so what's the goal of the consequence?
Right.
Do you want them to learn something? And what do you want them to learn? Or do you just want them to feel bad? Which one? And when you start to look at it that way, I'm not going to say if you care to look at it that way, because some parents don't care to look at it that way because they're tired, they're exhausted, they are overworked and underpaid. They are like, I don't have time for this mess.
Mm-hmm.
And I get that. I never want to discount the fact that parents are struggling really bad right now.
Yes,
and sometimes it just feels like this whole parenting thing is just one more thing that I got to do, and I'm resentful of it because I'm tired. I just want to take a nap.
Mm-hmm.
But I'm sorry, like, that's what we signed up for when we had them.
Yes, congratulations.
And so we have to figure out, like, okay, I'm tired right now, so you know what? I can't talk to you about what just happened. But just know that we got to figure something out so this doesn't happen again in the future. But I'm like, there's ways for you to have this discussion, especially with older kids. But a lot of us just don't want to. We want to be stuck in that pattern of the same stuff that we got, because it's just easier, to be honest.
I wonder if some of it is, too, how people have been trained. Like, some of the triggers or reflexes are part of how you were trained. So that boy's being bad, so you smack him, because
that's definitely it.
That's what happened. You didn't even think about what is he? Is he bad or is he hungry? Is he bad or is he scared?
Nah.
Is he bad or is he bad? And we don't even go that deep. It's just easier. Those are reflexes. Those are, you know. And I wonder also, because tribal communities have been very good at this, but are starting to have some challenges in this area too. But a lot of discipline for us, you had some help. Your maternal uncles were supposed to be your disciplinarians. Your aunties were supposed to talk to you about your behavior. It never just fell on parents all by themselves to try to, you know, get it all together. It's like, oh, your grandma's coming to talk to you about this, you know, and it wasn't a threat. It wasn't anything negative. It was that everyone saw themselves as having a role in making this child successful. And now we see people that are isolated and lonely and, you know, trying to make ends meet. And this is just one more thing, and there's no one to come to help them. So is community an important part of decolonizing our parenting?
It's one of the most important parts. This is why I'm having such struggles right now, because my community is so small. I'm a single parent, but also my sister just lives a few doors down, but she also is a single parent. So it's not like I can be like, oh, come over. You know, like, she has things going on too. One of the things that I'm doing in the very near future is getting some land with a few friends who are also conscious parents, and we're building a village, because we want to help each other raise our children in this space. We're going to grow food and, like, have a farm school and, like, all these things. We're getting it together right now, because this is not sustainable for me. It's not healthy for my daughter.
Right.
And so really understand that community is a big part. You really think about it, like, your coaches, kids' coaches, their teachers, like you said, aunties and grandmothers, these are all village members. And as a parent, you're not going to know everything. You're not going to have the capacity to do everything. You're not going to know everything. There should be somebody that you can be like, you know what, I don't know, but let me go ahead and ask this person. Right? Because that's what the village is for. So the parent doesn't have to know everything. We're not equipped to know everything. We are limited by our own lived experiences and our own knowledge. But everyone around us has this amazing knowledge, and they can use their own lived experiences to help your child. So because our communities are so fractured, we have to be very intentional about finding community, about figuring out who are safe people to have our children around. A lot of our relatives may not be safe people to have them around. They may have been abusers or are abusers. And you're like, okay, great village, but I'm not bringing my child around these people because I don't want to be around them.
That's
awesome.
Right.
Get you some friends. I get frustrated when I'm telling people some of this stuff, and it's just kind of like, but.
Yeah.
It's like, listen, I don't know what to tell you, but you sitting in your house by yourself, trying this and not doing well at it, if that means you have to get out of your house sometimes. You have to figure out if you can't get out your house, who can you connect with online? A lot of my friends have become like sisters to me, and I met them on Facebook. Right? So it's like, what can you do? Instead of thinking about what you can't do, what can you do to help cultivate more community in your life? Because community helps you reclaim time, reclaim your sanity, and help you be more of a person, a well-rounded person. You're not just mom or dad or uncle. You are also, I'm a woman with, you know, and a business owner, and I have needs outside of parenting. I am more than just this one thing for my daughter. I have to be something for me too. And if I'm not, then there's going to be resentment. There's going to be anger. There's going to be sadness. Parents, we matter. I'm not a martyr. I'm not here to just be like, I'll do everything for my child. Everything has to include you taking care of you and you figuring out how you can reclaim some of your time away from care tasks and child rearing to be you and get back to things that you love to do. Because of capitalism, we are so tired. There's so many of us that have to work a few jobs to make ends meet. Rent is increasing. The apple juice I normally buy used to be $1.89 and it has gone up to $2.39.
Exactly.
I'm just like, that doesn't sound significant, but when somebody drinks apple juice every single day, I'm like, can I get an apple tree so I can make my own damn
That's right. And, you know, we're saying that, and we're it's real, because it's not just the apple juice. It's also the toilet tissue. It's all of it. And so at one time, all of this is happening. And, you know, we have the ability to say, you know what, I'm switching to orange juice. We have the ability to say, well, I'm just going to drink some water. But these little people that depend on us, they don't. apple juice is what they know. And so I think those are the things I'm seeing in folks over and over again. And, you know, one of the things I love about our, and I mean indigenous all over the world, is that being the matriarchy used to be honored. Like when you gave birth, when you joined the matriarchy, you changed your name, you got to wear different clothes and jewelry, hairstyles, you were honored. And part of that honor was that people helped to take care of you and helped you take care of your children, right? And that is something I would love to see us bring back into the mainstream and the dominant culture, that, you know, we should be celebrating mothers. We should be honoring fathers. We should be blessing parents and grandparents who are trying to do the right thing and helping them, really holding up their arms while they try to hold up the sky.
Yes.
And that is so important. You know, when we come back from commercial, we're going to talk about how-tos, because I think that's really important. We've got to give people some tools. But, you know, I'm really passionately invested in this conversation because in January of this year, my biological mother choked, knocked me down, broke my leg in three places. And I had to be in traction for 8 weeks, had to learn to walk again, still learning to walk again. And it was all because she felt I disrespected her. I'm a grown woman. I'm a mother. Mm-hmm. I have a family. And this is what has happened. And I believe that that is the culmination of what happens when we don't decolonize parenting. When it's so deep-rooted in people that, you know, I can be violent no matter how old you are, no matter how grown you are, no matter how, you know, how connected or disconnected, this has to stop. And I made up my mind in my life, even before I had a miracle baby, and you know what that's like, that I wasn't going to hit him. I'm not going to yell at him. He's not going to be afraid of me. He's not going to be injured by me. He's not going to have to lie to me. Now, nobody's perfect. So, I mean, you know, we can have the best intentions and we hope that the children turn out like we hope, but I wanted to at least break that cycle. I wanted to break that. The violence ends here. It ends. And so when we come back, I want to give folks some real tools because this is a topic that's absolutely dear to my heart. So we'll be back right after these commercials, and I am so blessed by this conversation, and I know you will continue to be too. We'll be right back.
The hardest thing to do at times is to make changes in your routine. Don't let that hold you back.
Wait a minute. They told us we had an oil shortage. Well, yeah, I guess in a way we are running out of oil.
I'm Wes.
I'm Tia.
And I'm Heather.
And we are Three Voices.
You want this drum over here? It's clear. You got Gilbert over here. You got LeBron over here. And guess what? We talking about it.
I'm trying to get over the dog whistle politics thing because I can't hear it and dogs supposed to hear it. So who hears the dog whistle?
Your opportunity is now to get up-to-the-minute information, great entertainment, and stimulating talk programs on your computer. Yes, I said your computer. Just log on to TalkTainmentRadio.com, click Listen Live to hear a program. The blogs and podcasts are up and running. TalkTainmentRadio.com can also be heard on your cell phone.
Yes, I said cell phone.
TalkTainment Radio. We go where you go.
We are strong, and we'll get through this together. But these are stressful times. Reach out to someone, connect with your friends, and know that you are not alone. Visit wearebroadcasters.com/hope. Furnished by the National Association of Broadcasters and this station.
Hi, everyone. Al Roker here. As a guy with his own catchphrase, I appreciate that after 75 years, Smokey's only said,
"Only you can prevent wildfires."
But I'm filling in because there's a lot more to report. Like when it's dry or windy. Be careful burning yard waste, because wildfires can even start in your neck of the woods. Go to SmokeyBear.com to learn more about wildfire prevention. Brought to you by the U.S. Forest Service, your state forester, and the Ad Council.
I can't believe he found them.
He seems sorry.
We very clearly told him not to look up there.
I'm honestly impressed that he was able to do it.
Right? What did he balance on that big chair?
I guess he'll just know what his gifts are this year.
I really thought we had hidden them well.
If they can find their presence, they can find a gun.
911, what is your emergency?
Every day, 8 kids and teens are unintentionally killed or injured by loaded and unlocked guns. Learn how to make your home safer at endfamilyfire.org. Brought to you by the Ad Council and End Family Fire.
Peace Corps. Life is calling. How far will you go? To find out more, call 1-800-424-8580 or visit peacecorps.gov.
What a dynamic discussion we are having. I am so thankful for our guest today. Would you please reintroduce yourself to our friends who are listening?
Hi, my name is Yolanda Williams. I'm the founder of Parents to Decolonize, and I help teach specifically Black parents, but all parents, how to decolonize their parenting and raise liberated children through conscious parenting techniques and through shifting mindset.
How wonderful that you're here today. How can folks actually become part of this revolutionary parenting movement or connect with you or get some help from you?
I'm all over social media. You can find me on Facebook, TikTok, Instagram, and Twitter. But I also have a yearly parenting summit. I have one this year happening in October. And it really is for first generation people like you and me, first generation conscious parents, to help us get support. Because a big part of conscious parenting is community. To be the first, one of the first people in your family to practice nonviolent parenting, to shift how you think about children, is hard in this really unconscious world that only sees children as subhuman still. And so, you know, I'm bringing together some educators, some activists, some advocates to really help parents get some of the tools that they need to make the mindset shift they need to make, and give them just like practical advice on discipline and on how to raise critical thinkers and how to be kind and firm at the same time. And that way they can, and to actually form an actual conscious parenting plan, because a lot of us kind of willy-nilly this thing. It's like, I told someone on Twitter that I read a bunch of books before my daughter was born, and he actually called himself making fun of me. My mom did one time, too. She made fun of me for, like, reading books. And I was just like, wow, so we can read about everything else in the world, but not parenting. It's just supposed to come natural to us? That's false. It does not come natural in the way that we want it to for people who want to be conscious parents. Because the default parenting is violent in this country. So we need tools. We need strategies. We need books. We need educators to help us make that shift. So hopefully in the future, you know, when our children are parents, if they ever become a parent, they may not need to read the books, because we've normalized this type of parenting for them. And maybe we can shift it so this is the default parenting, where conscious and gentle parenting is the default, again, because it was in the past.
Yes. And see, I'm amazed by that, too, even with marriage, and that's a different topic for a different day, but I'm interested in how many people who, when you tell them, I'm going to read books about marriage, I'm going to study how to have a happy, healthy relationship, I'm going to study how to have a happy family, I'm going to study how to have a strong and wonderful parenting rapport with my child, people are like, oh, yeah. But if you told them, I'm going to really look at the latest makeup tutorial on Instagram, so that looks great, oh, good, you know,
talk about like business. Like, they will invest in business. They will invest in making money. They will invest in how to like buy a house. They want, you know, people invest time and money into a lot of things, but not parenting.
Right. But not us. We're all going to do that. We're all going to upgrade. We're going to do it. So how would someone connect with you? Where would they, you know, find you right now today?
So I have a website, parentsdecolonize.com. I also have a podcast. I've been on kind of hiatus for the last, like, 8 months. But you can go back and listen to my past podcast. And I have different people on there where we discuss all sorts of topics. Now, like I said, I speak specifically about the nuance of parenting while Black in this country. But my audience is largely not Black. Because a lot of the stuff is able to be, you know, they're learning about the stuff we have to go through, but also they can take this information still and apply it to their own parenting. So You can listen to my podcast, again, Parenting Decolonized, anywhere you listen to podcasts, and start at episode one.
Yeah,
I think
great.
I have like 80, so there's a few to get through.
Yeah, that's wonderful. Thank you. Okay, we've got to have some tools, though, because let's say our friends are listening and they realize, uh-oh, So let's start with this. Why should they change? And I really think we have to use the word violence. I do. I've come to that through my own experience, that we have to start calling it violence. We can't just say, you know, training. You know, there's a documentary now, Shiny Happy People, on Amazon Prime. It talks a lot about the role in a certain kind of Christianity in developing this. But we can't just call it, you know, home training, discipline, punishment. We've got to call it what it is. So why should we change? I mean, you and I are not parenting like this, but if one of our friends, they got a beating, they got a whooping, and they turned out all right, what's the motivation to change from violence to conscious parenting?
You know, my biggest motivation is, again, if we look at the world around us, violent parenting is not effective. Mm-hmm. We are angry, we are violent, there's not a whole lot of progress as far as generational wealth.
Right.
The world, there's no benefit to it. I have yet to see a benefit to it.
Mm-hmm. Exactly.
And so when I think about parenting, I do not think about it on an individual level.
Mm-hmm.
I think about it in a community level. So what I do in my home affects the community.
Yeah.
The person I'm raising has to be in the world.
Yeah.
So that affects everybody. And so I want to put something out into the world that is emotionally well, that is has emotional regulation skills, communication skills, conflict resolution skills, the ability to empathize with others. Like, I want to make sure my daughter is able to go out and be like, and the biggest one, recognize harm.
Because
you parent in a way that is nonviolent, in a way that is respectful to the child, they are then more protected from predators because they're able to recognize them faster.
That's
and they're
right.
not tricked as easily because you also are raising a critical thinker.
Uh-huh.
And when we think about the community at large, again, a lot of folks are not critical thinkers.
Uh-huh.
A lot of people are are not emotionally well. They don't understand communication. They have poor boundaries. They don't know how to resolve conflicts without violence.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm like, who does that serve? Who does it serve to have a population of people who do not think critically, who solve their problems with violence, who are not able to generate generational wealth?
Mm-hmm.
Systemically, who does that serve? It serves really rich and powerful people who want to keep us stuck in that space.
My goodness.
So for me, the way that I parent is like a protest. It's like a revolutionary way of being like, I'm not going to allow you in my home infiltrating my child's brain, making her angry. And, you know, because I have that's the power that I have. I can control the messaging that I allow into my house.
Mm-hmm.
That's true for me, too. And so this is like, for me, just a way of saying, you know, like almost like a middle finger to the system.
Mm-hmm.
Because, again, to raise people who are emotionally well, who you know, understand that nonviolence, but also that violence has a space in some places, like understanding when to lie, being able to keep themselves safe because they have to lie sometimes, that's critical thinking.
Yes.
And when you raise people like that, they are less likely to allow themselves to be taken advantage of with individuals and with systems. I'm raising someone who will protest. I'm raising an activist. Mother who will stand up for other people and for themselves and will not be quiet about it. Now, it's not easy to raise that person because they're hard children to raise, and they will challenge all of your conscious parenting skills
because
they don't listen. They don't listen well. You got to teach them. You got to actively teach them. And so the difference between, you know, punitive parents, violent parents, is that they're not actively teaching anything. I ask people all the time, were you raised or did you just grow up? Were you raised with someone who just like, don't do that, do this instead? Here's how to do this. Let me show you. Let me talk to you about this. were you raised, or did you just learn by default because someone smacked your hand? Did you just learn because you were cussed out? Because you saw someone, you saw the way that this person was, and you didn't want to be that way anymore. Like, were you raised, or did you just grow up? Because I just grew up. I wasn't actively taught a lot of things that I'm teaching myself now. Right? And so just think about the world and how you want it. Really just like, I'm a futuristic thinker. I'm a radical imaginationer. That's not a word. What do you want the world to look like? Because you have, if that's the case, like, think about, what do you want this world to look like and feel like and sound like and smell like? Really think about that. Close your eyes and envision that world and your child in it. So who are they going to be in that world?
Right. Yes. Who are
and
they?
Who are they? Then who do you need to become for them to be that person? Because they can't get there alone.
Right. Exactly. And let's talk practically about that. Let's say somebody realizes right now, this minute, today, that they want to make a shift and do and be a conscious parent, an attached parent, a gentle parent, whatever we want to call it, but they want to do better. Let's put it that way. What do they practically do?
Yeah. I'm going to just tell you right now. I wrote a post today. It won't be easy. I'm just telling you that right now. If you were raised violently, if you were raised with somebody with low emotional intelligence or no emotional intelligence, that means you weren't taught emotional intelligence. You need to learn it, right? So you're going to struggle with those things, learning to reparent yourself as you're parenting a child. And so this is not easy work, and I never want to make it seem that. But I also don't want to discourage you, because it's easy, but it's worth it.
Yes.
The first step that I always ask people to take is the first, really understanding why you want to be that kind of parent. Like, what is your why? What is your parenting why? Because that why is almost like writing a business mission statement. It kind of just keeps you grounded. So you can always go back to that. When you're struggling, you can be like, why am I even doing this? What is this all for? I'm tired. So you can go back and be like, that's why I'm doing it. So for me, my parenting why is, I want to be my child's friend when she's older. I want her to want to talk to me. I want, because when they get older, they have a choice, y'all, okay?
Yep, right here.
You got 18 summers with them where they don't have a choice. But when they, after them 18 years, they have a choice.
That's right.
And if you're not a good person and a good, and then you've been a parent that basically just like put a roof over their head and stomach, food in their stomach, and that's all, you're not the little friend, then they may not choose to hang out with you.
That's
I want my daughter to choose to hang out with me and want to be a friend and have a good relationship with her. So if that's the case, I need to become, who do I need to become for her? That's the second step. So once you have your why, you then work backwards. Who do I need to become in order to be my child's friend in the future? She's 5 years old. What does that look like now for her? What is that? So now you have almost like a roadmap. These are the type of person that I want to be in order for that why to come to fruition. So now you have like a space to start. I also really recommend, after you do that, is finding a group, a conscious parenting group, some mentors, a pages you can follow that will help you along the way. Because this is not something that you just do by yourself. This is community effort, and there are a lot of people who are out there to support you. Some people have a lot of things they charge for. Other people don't. So just start searching. I want to find people who look like me. So I sought out Black parenting coaches and educators, and I'm friends with a lot of them. And so find your people, find a group that you can connect with, ask questions without judgment and shame, and then find you that one person that you can call or text when and say anything that you want to say to, and that will not judge you for it. I have two people in my life that I can call, and I can say things I will never say to anybody else. But I just have to say it, and I have to get it out. And they know my heart. They know what I – they know – that I love my child, but I'm struggling in this moment. And so I'm saying things that I don't mean, but I would never say to her or anybody else. I just got to get them out. And so having that person helps a lot, because those thoughts will come up, y'all. And and I want to tell you that it is a product of supremacy culture to think you're going to be perfect at this. Perfectionism is a supremacy culture trait. So it's binary thinking. Either you're doing this perfect or you are a poo-poo
failing
parent. You don't love your child. That is supremacy culture trait. That is upholding, you know, capitalism, white supremacy, and patriarchy. Because those are the the binaries that, that all of those things live in is the either or and perfectionism.
That's
and
right.
So try mm-hmm. not to get, you're going to make mistakes. You apologize. You're going to learn what's going on in your body. That's like, to me, one of the biggest things. We've been disconnected from our bodies a lot, especially Black and Indigenous people.
Yeah.
When you are told you can't say, you can't feel, you can't have, you have to shut down parts of your body.
That's
and now right. it's an intergenerational trauma where we have learned to not feel certain things in our bodies. So
mm-hmm.
now we have to get to know ourselves. What does it uh-huh. feel like when I'm mad? What does uh-huh. it feel like when I am about to go off and get triggered?
Uh-huh.
What does joy feel like?
Yeah.
You know what I'm saying? Like, mm-hmm. What does it feel uh-huh. like when I'm just content?
Yes.
What does that feel like? You know, how does my body feel? And when you start to take notice of that, then you can start catching yourself when you're about to get triggered and you're like, oh, I'm noticing my palms are kind of shaking, my heart's beating fast. Let me get away from my child right now so I don't cause her harm.
Yeah.
Right? And you can start to make, just start pausing, because that space between their behavior and your reaction is everything.
Yeah.
So if you're able to create space there and just be like, okay, I'm about to go off. I'm going to go in the bathroom real quick. That's what I do.
Uh-huh.
I just run. I run away. And
even if you have
positive.
To deputize it. Even if you have to deputize
okay.
it, like, I'm too mad right now, your dad will have
yeah.
to deal with you. You know what I mean? Or, you know, even if you have to outsource it a little bit, you know, it's like.
You can outsource it, or you can just say, you know what,
yeah.
I am so angry with you, but you know
yeah.
what? I don't want to respond to you from this place. I need
mm-hmm.
to calm down before
mm-hmm.
this goes any further. Because
mm-hmm.
that teaches them. That
right.
teaches them that they should not engage with people when
right.
they're that upset.
And certainly not be violent toward other people.
Yeah.
Certainly not be,
so
you know.
Then, exactly.
Yeah. Yeah. Because
so you're learning that. And
right.
saying it to them.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
It teaches
yes.
them.
Oh, how excellent. That's really wonderful that you shared that with us, because I think that a lot of people feel like they're doomed to a ditch on either side. Like, either you're just the perfect saintly mother with a little halo and you always are smiling,
mm-hmm.
the 1950s model, right? Or
yeah, but they were beating their kids.
Right, yeah, you just have no, yeah, exactly.
They were beating the heck out of their kids and their husbands were beating them.
Oh, goodness.
And that's the thing, the stuff that we hold dear in this country, and love that
yeah.
idealistic 1950s
housewife. It never
housewife,
was.
She
yeah.
was drunk. She
mm-hmm.
was drunk and high most of the time,
mm-hmm.
and she was getting her butt kicked a lot of the times, being cheated on, and they were both beating their kids up. So, like, that, ask any boomer what they went through with their parents.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
They will tell you how violent it was. I'm
yeah.
not sure where this idyllic definition of families came from, because it's always been violent in this country. And before the boomers, they weren't even raising their kids, white people.
Right.
Other people were.
Yeah.
So it's
and
like, we have to be honest about that. There is no idyllic picture of family in this country at all.
Well, one of the things I hear also, and I really think it's important, I think the accountability, you know, a lot
mm-hmm.
of this thrives in secrecy.
Yes.
You know, what goes on in this house stays in this house. You exposed me, you know, it thrives because of secrecy. And I think when we as parents make ourselves accountable, you know, I said to my best friend before I even gave birth, I want you to keep me accountable. You know what I mean? In other words, I'm going to be this kind of parent, and I want you to, you know, if you see me and I'm not right, you check me on that. You tell me, you know. And, you know, even in Southern culture, the Bible Belt where we are, that is a lot of, oh, boy, you know, a lot of it even is church. And, you know, well, you know, you want to train them up. You want to do this. And you
yes.
get people around you who believe in how you want to parent. You know, we belong to a faith community, to a church that loves children and doesn't think you should be hitting them. And so they, are you tired? You want someone to come over and watch her for a while. You know, you hear that kind of thing as opposed
yeah.
to just you should be violent. And so accountability can start with folks listening to your podcast. Accountability can start with them coming to your summit. Accountability can start with you talking to your friends and your trusted people in your life and saying, you know, I want to do better. And when people do that about something like sobriety, everybody cheers.
Yes.
You know, people say, oh, you know, I want to get, they want to quit drinking. They want to quit using. People, oh, that's wonderful. That's just great. Whole communities exist to help them do that. But when people say, you know what, I don't want to terrorize my children. I don't want them to marry people just like me and then have an unhappy home. You know, I want them to have healthy relationships. I want rapport with them, because if I don't have rapport with them, then why should they listen to my guidance and discipline? You know, I want rapport. And people are like, what now? You know, just keep doing the same mistakes we already did. So just that kind of accountability, I think you're offering that. You're saying, you know, if you want to do this in a better way, you know, I have these resources and I have this education and I will help you. And I really admire and thank you for that.
Thank you. Thank you for this conversation, too. And just one quick thing on accountability. I'll make it quick.
Sure,
your children can also hold you accountable, because especially if you have older kids or kids who understand you started spanking, but you want to stop, because that's a large portion of people, too. They recognize, like, be this, and I want to transition over to the side. And that's harder to do, right? Because you got kids who remember every butt whooping, time you yelled at them, they remember it. And they resent you for it. They might not ever say it, but they don't trust you, and they resent you. And that is okay. Like, you've earned that, right? So now you have to earn back their trust. So you can say to them, you know what? I always tell people, when you want to make that transition, you've got to communicate with your kids. You cannot one day
just wake up and
show up and be like, okay, I'm not going to hit you anymore. They're going to be like, who is this person, and what did you do with my mom or with my father? Like, what's this going on? Communicate and then let them know. You can hold me accountable. If I'm yelling at you, or you feel like I'm about to, like, haul off and hit you, let's come up with a phrase or a word. This is a technique I give parents all the time. Mm-hmm. With the family, sit down and think of a phrase or a word that you can say in the heat of the moment that will help you, help the parent disengage from being harmed.
Yeah.
So if I'm yelling at you and you say something like, rainbow ponies,
mm-hmm.
like, mom, rainbow ponies, that's going to trigger in my mind, like, I'm being harmful.
Mm-hmm.
And I stop. And before it goes too far, it just kind of helps you snap out of that moment. Cause, you know, we get going sometimes as parents, and we don't know when to stop. So you can tell them, any parent who cannot take criticism from their children, just is the Lulu. You would get criticism from work, from even as entrepreneur, I get criticism from people that you know,
social
I
media,
work with.
Literally
social media,
all
of
built
it.
On
like,
criticism. Yeah.
For your child to not be able to tell you that you've hurt them, that you're yelling at them, all that stuff, like that doesn't make any sense. You should be able to get feedback from your child. You can sit them down and you can, or have them write you a letter or anything, but let them hold you accountable, because then you start to reestablish that trust, and they can tell you, like, hey, you owe me an apology. Like, the way you just talked to me was really rude, because respect goes both ways. You cannot say, I am the only person who deserves respect because I'm the adult. You can't say you disrespect me while you disrespect them. It's hypocritical, and they're taking note of it.
That's right. And I think I want to say this. Do not underestimate the power of an apology, a sincere apology.
Yes.
You know, my granddad used to say, repentance ain't no big thing. Just stop and turn around. And I think there's something to be said for that. You know, when I was pregnant with my son, I made that a policy. And to this day, during our evening prayers, I apologize to him. Now, I've never hit him. I don't yell at him. But I just want to start that. I want to start that as, you know, I'm sorry if I was distracted on my phone when you were trying to show me that cartoon. You know, I really want to start that place where at all times I am open to apologizing to him. And I just want to encourage our friends that are listening that, you know, it's not, okay, you're the parent. Okay, you put a roof over their head. Yeah, okay. But do you really want to be 90 at the nursing home and nobody comes to see you? Do you really want them to talk about you as the greatest villain and terrorizer in their life? Do you want them to marry someone who treats them like you treat them and end up in a terrible situation? I mean, do you really, when all you really could, you could stop that right now. Stop and turn around. You could stop and turn around. Tell them one more time where they can find you.
You can find me on parentingdecolonized.com. I'm also on Facebook under Parenting Decolonized, Twitter, and Instagram under the same thing. And I'm also on TikTok. And again, you can listen to my podcast anywhere you listen to podcasts. It's called the Parents Decolonized Podcast.
Well, I sure appreciate you being here with us today. Thank you for taking the time out of your busy schedule to help us, to teach us, and to encourage us.
Thank you so much for the work that you're doing and for this conversation that I'm sure may not be the most popular, but is very needed.
Well, transformational. Transformational.
Yes.
You know, if it changes one person's family for the better. I know it certainly has changed and helped mine. Just having this conversation with you today lets me know that I like the path of conscious parenting that we're on. And so I thank you for joining us. I thank all of our friends who joined us today, our sponsors, our donors. This is a labor of love, and you help us every time we've ever needed it. And I'm so grateful. And I'm grateful to all of you that listen. And I can't wait till we're all together next time. My name is Dr. Dawn Karima, and I'll see you then.
You got the power. The world's greatest radio. TalkTainmentRadio.com.